I often think that it's a real shame that our coverage of scripture passages at any given diet of worship is so truncated. We take little bites here and there. Because useful as it is to draw a lesson from one section or even text of scripture, we discover richer veins if we are able to look at the broader picture from time to time. And so today, I want to summarize the story of Gideon, from which, in the last weeks that I have been here, we have extracted sections. Gideon's story goes something like this. He was an ordinary young man who, it appears, had a visitation from an angel of God telling him that he was to be the one to free the people of Israel from the oppression of the invading Midianites. The first thing he has to do is to destroy the images of Baal in his village and to recall the people to the worship of God. Gideon asks for and receives several signs from God that he is indeed interpreting God's will aright, and proceeds to the demolition. The people in his village are at first set for revenge on him. Well, revenge against whoever destroyed their settled ways. But as they think things through, they do recognize that Baal has been a distraction from where their true allegiance lies. And so the preparation's over. Gideon is ready to recruit his army to fight the Midianites. Thousands turn up. But Gideon realizes that if he were to lead such numbers into battle, people would think that the victory was a result of their strength of numbers and not of their dependence upon God. So the story goes, Gideon reduces the numbers to 300 men. Again, Gideon has reservations as to how this is going to work. And it's not until he spies out the land and hears the Midianites saying that the God of the Israelites will surely give Gideon the victory that he sets out with real confidence. Victory is won by Gideon's army, and the people of Israel urge Gideon to be their ruler. But Gideon refuses, urging whoever will listen to look to no one but God for their guidance and protection. Have they learned nothing? Friends, if the story ended there, Gideon would be nothing other than a shining example of one who, having learnt the ways of God and walked in them all his life, just succeeded. But I guess with me, you're a bit perplexed by the incident recorded in the passage which we read this morning. Perplexed because nothing I have read enables me to be totally clear about Gideon's motivation when he asks the Israelites to bring the booty that they have taken in battle with the Midianites. Where was Gideon going here? You might argue that Gideon's intention was to turn the spoils of war into something beautiful for God. But that's certainly not the way it turned out. So that within a generation, the people of Israel had again abandoned their trust in God and returned to the worship of idols. You would think, wouldn't you, that after all they had been through, and after all the signs they had had of God's power and presence available to them, they would have learnt their lesson. Three thoughts I want to extract from Gideon's story, which might just be useful in our own experience. The first, friends, is that we can never be complacent in our faith, thinking that we've arrived and nothing can shake us. There's plenty out there to divert us from wholehearted allegiance to God and his ways. Plenty to tempt us to forsake the path of constancy, dip into John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, and you will find a whole variety of situations that threaten to divert Christian from reaching the celestial city. And each of them has parallels in our own experience. There are the demands of work and home life. Yeah, these are important. There are the times of ease when things are going well and we feel no need to connect with God. There are the times of difficulty and sadness when it can be hard to hold on to faith. There's the pull of amassing possessions and the time when arguments against faith seem so plausible. And then there's the desire to sometimes break out from our routine and grab hold of full possession of our lives and their direction. No, we can never be complacent in our faith. But the second thought emerges from the first. Faith and constancy in faith need to be in continual motion. As each day dawns, our faith is asked to face new challenges, to make new decisions, to engage with new situations. And of course, such thinking flies in the face of the widely held belief that once you're a Christian, you don't really need to think about it or do anything about it anymore. I gave my life to Jesus. That's it. I'll just go and get on with that life. But friends, the opposite is in fact true. Becoming a Christian is merely the beginning of a process which needs to inform and be informed by every situation in life, so that we need constantly to be checking our behaviour and our priorities against the standards which God sets. And the third point I want to make today is no house becomes derelict, no garden completely overgrown in a matter of a few months. Only persistent neglect renders such an outcome. And the same goes for faith. A compromise here and a compromise there may seem such small things at the time, but slackness in commitment breeds slackness. And down the line, as the compromises multiply, we find that the effort to rebuild, the effort to clear out, the swallowing of pride to confess and seek forgiveness becomes too hard a hill to climb. My dad used to use the phrase clogs to clogs in three generations. God's disappointment in Gideon might well have been expressed as idols to idols in one life. What will his verdict be on us?